This is Data Citizens Dialogues, your guide to bringing trust to your data, decisions, and all things AI. For Calibra, I'm Thomas Brents. Hello there, and welcome to this episode of Data Citizens Dialogues. Not long ago, this podcast was called The Data Download. But recently, we changed the name up a bit as we're really dialed in to exclusively bringing you stories from our customer community that we call Data Citizens. Make sense? So now the next question is, who am I? Well, much like Dateline has a host, Lester Holt, I'm the host of the Data Citizens Dialogues, Thomas Brents. Here at Calibra, I'm the Vice President of Portfolio Marketing, and often I'll sit down with our customers to tell their stories. But to stick with my Dateline analogy, sometimes we have guest hosts. This week is one of those times, and today I'm happy to have one of my team members, Karen Corley, interview our customer, Telus. Karen will be our Keith Morrison, or better yet, Andrea Canning for today. All right, enough showing you my Dateline fandom. Let's turn the show over to the real star today. Karen, take it away.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Data Download. I'm your host for today, Karen Corley. I'm with Calibra's portfolio marketing team, and I'm focused on our customer success, services, and support offerings. With me today is Tanya Glisson from Telus. Tanya, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. This is exciting, and I'm happy to be here, and especially talking to you.
Yes, Tanya and I have gotten to be friends over the past 6 months or so, and it's just a joy to be with you today. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Absolutely. So my name is Tanya Glisson, and I'm a strategy manager at Telus, responsible for metadata management program and a platform, Calibra platform that we have supporting that program. That's what I do today, right? It's a like a little bit of introduction from my past lives and how I got here, to deal with the data management job and metadata specifically this time. Journey started a long time ago.
Yes.
I was in a series of data management related roles. I didn't even know there were data management roles at the time. Started as a database administrator many moons ago. Then ETL programming became a thing, right? That's how we did it, right? Got into data modeling and data architecture after that and in parallel. Data quality management was something that was a new big thing back then, and nobody wanted to do it. Nobody wanted to do it at the time, and I'm like, okay, I'll do it.
That sounds like you.
I learned a lot. Every time I said yes to something like that, I learned a lot and just, kept building on it. I did tour it a little bit, in my career to the enterprise architecture, but even there, I got this, great learning. And that's where I got introduced to the governance. I actually first got introduced to the architecture governance, and then the data governance kind of came along, all right? And here we are today, metadata managing and strategy for the metadata management program at Telus.
So, Tanya, for one thing, I have to acknowledge the fact that I have said the name Telus many times, and for the first time, I just realized how much that sounds like tell us your name. I feel very silly for having just realized that. But please tell us about your data mission.
Yes, our program is kind of young. The metadata management program is 4 or 5 years now. But I believe we actually have a very strong mission. And our mission is to empower Telus with the comprehensive metadata management platform to begin with, right? And enabling business units to efficiently manage, govern, and leverage their data assets. Our team is dedicated to driving business value with metadata for fostering a data-driven culture within Telus.
You've come a long way in 5 years, and that was very clear this week. We are together at the Data Citizens Conference, and TELUS just won Data Program of the Year. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. We worked hard.
Yes, you did. You earned it. So tell me, how's your experience been with Data Citizens so far?
Oh, yeah. This is the second day. It's really great. I like the setup. I really do. I was just sharing with someone recently, like I take every opportunity to do that. I really like what you did with the brand. I really like the clear communication, and the slides are beautiful. I really love where the brand is going.
Denise will be happy to hear that.
Oh, she can call me.
We'll tell her. So, okay, and as we're here, one of the questions we always want to know is, what brought you to Calibra? What were the challenges that TELUS was experiencing? And how did you realize that data intelligence was going to be your solution?
We, at that time when we were looking at technology solutions, right, we pretty much knew that we needed that one-stop shop for the information discovery. TELUS is a big place. There are a lot of knowledge workers, right? And intuitively at the beginning, we really understood that there's so much data and people don't even know about it, right? Little did we know that was our original use case when you think about it. And the use case is really about, providing that self-serve capability for people to come in and find what they're looking for.
Awesome. I think you've called it data democratization. That does not roll off the tongue, but
I think we started calling it, use case of data democratization a little bit later in the game.
Yeah.
Because when we started, we were just so curious to understand if technology can support us, right? Later on, we realized all along we were digging for that experience, right? That later really kind of solidified itself as the use case for data democratization. We always had that at the back of our minds that, data is there for everyone to see what they can get out of it, right? Data is not meant to be locked up.
Well said. Agreed. And Tanya, I know here at Data Citizens, one of the things that you presented on was actually starting out as a program owner, kind of road mapping your path. And it was a great session. So thank you for doing that.
Thank you.
Could you tell us a little bit about what it was like when you were first starting out as a program owner?
Starting as a, product or a program owner or a manager, especially like strategy manager, it was exciting, and it's also challenging, right?
Yes. And
there are certain things that you must count on, as you stepping into that role. There will be a wide range of responsibilities that you potentially didn't have before. You, the person that has to be clear on what's the program objective, what's the strategy, how do you transform that strategy into a meaningful roadmap, right? And then how do you start acting on that? Like, you cannot act on your roadmap, you cannot execute if you don't have a meaningfully built team. That's another thing I think we mentioned yesterday in our session. Your needs for building the team are going to be different from, first 6 months versus, third year. You maturing. And what you needed first 6 months, it's not what you need in 3 years. And that's okay.
Yes.
You just need to keep on, on your job. And if objectives are changing, you need to react to it. So that's really, responsibilities are going to be, a bit different in that role. You'll be in a leadership role by default, because you dealing with a lot of different stakeholders. You are you're managing expectations, and you have to be in that leadership mindset in making sure that everybody's doing what they're supposed to do.
Something you've also mentioned along with that is there's a particular role that you also play making everyone happy. I'm not leading the witness.
No, no, actually, my job is not to make anyone happy. We can talk about that a little later. I think my job is really to manage expectations, right? Stakeholder management is a big one.
Yeah.
You will be interacting with many, many different stakeholders. If you think when you're starting that you know that about the job, just times two or three, right? It's about, you know, you'll be interacting with senior management, with sponsors, with internal partners, external partners. It's really like that portion is a huge part of the job.
Yes, absolutely. And I know you do a great job of it. So
thank you. Another big part of that role, maybe you are ready for it, maybe you're not. It's risk management, managing the risks. They can be smaller, they can be bigger, but it's really your responsibility to identify and mitigate risks, to the program itself. And that's the sixth sense, I call it. Like, you know, it comes in. If you have a sixth sense, that helps in this particular area, because you need to almost anticipate potential challenges. But again, that goes back to your stakeholder management. You getting closer to your stakeholders. You know who they are. Sometimes you start to anticipate how they're going to react and what you're going to do, right? So that's the part of the role, you know, to mitigate their risks and be ready to react quickly sometimes with a meaningful plan, how to proceed. Continuous improvement.
We've talked a lot about this one. So I think something that Tanya has mentioned and she does a wonderful job of is not just improving, but tracking the improvements over time. Tell us a little bit more about what you mean and what you're doing.
Yes, there's actually no rest in this role. For one day you think, oh my gosh, everything's going just the way it should, right? And then something, you know, comes up and there's this, you know, opportunity to fix the way you're going, where the program is, like, sometimes you will have all these plans set in place and the program just starts to, you know, slip, which is normal. So that's what it's important to understand, that it's your responsibility to kind of say, wait, you know, let's monitor, let's see if it's staying on point. Are we still going where we said we want to go and we need to go? And if that's not true, you have to do something differently about it. And that's, again, program manager responsibility to do that.
Absolutely. And I think you've also mentioned just constant and continuous learning and growth.
Yes, it is part of that role as well. We call it excellent opportunity to grow, to feel many different angles, really, of that role. As we said, you know, like leading, planning, managing, having these relationships, building the relationships with your stakeholders. It's like learning opportunities everywhere.
And one of the last things that you've mentioned in particular is how you keep people going. There's a particular role that you've called out, a CMO, as I recall. Tell us about it.
You said CMO, but
I did.
I think at least that's the case with us. And I don't know if that's the role requirement, but requirement is definitely to have a lot of energy and, you know, keep upbeat when everybody's, you know, kind of hanging their hands down, right? So I called it a morale officer.
And I added the chief. So chief morale officer.
So no, it's true. Like at least in our case, in my case, you have to be relentless. Like you really have to be the person that doesn't go down quickly and for no reason, right? Of this, you know, morale officer, the connection is being that person for your team when something unexpected happens, right? Someone who's not going to say, oh my gosh, you know, the sky's falling. And, you know, as a product manager, you're often in a situation where that perfect opportunity slips out of your fingers, right? And they're like, oh my gosh, that was so good. Like, we had a sponsor and, you know, it would be enabling three different capabilities and we would put it together like this and like that, right? And then for, you know, valid, sometimes very valid reasons, it doesn't come to fruition, right? Mm-hmm. That's where, you know, morale officer really kind of kicks in and like, it's okay, we'll get more of them, right? As I mentioned yesterday, I think in our session, we lingered a little bit on that aspect of what I do as well. We continuously manage the opportunities, right? And we use every opportunity to log the possibility, next possibility, right? So I groom those opportunities, right? So when a big one slips, right, we kind of go and say, okay, what can we make, you know, our next priority that is high value, and, you know, we can just continue with it.
Fantastic. And I've heard you say as well that you can't take no for an answer. If someone says no, then you figure out, you know, how do I turn it into a yes?
Yes.
So that you can keep going and find those wins anyway, and having a perfect partner with you to actually get the work done too.
Yes.
Tanya, how do you eat an elephant?
Okay, that's a question, right? You popped that one yesterday on me as well.
I did. You introduced me to this concept, and I've been thinking about it ever since. So please talk about why you would ever want to eat an elephant and how.
Yeah, it's a metaphor, of course, right? And a short answer is one bite at a time, right? It's really any situation where, you know, you're faced with something that is unknown, that is big, that you actually don't know, you know, where to really start. Is there a real start? Like, is there a, it doesn't say start on it, you know? Like,
wouldn't that be nice?
There's no, like, you know, start and finish and the arrows, no. So, joking aside, right? Like, that's something you kind of have to keep in mind whenever you're faced with a big and unknown, just like an elephant, right? If you don't see the edges or where it ends, doesn't mean you don't start, right? That only means you stop, take deep breaths, as many as you need, right? Really break it down into manageable parts. That's it, right? And as you kind of go through that, I would say, mental exercise, right, and breaking it into manageable bits and pieces, something you can chew on and not choke, right? What you're really doing, you're starting to lean on techniques of, you know, managing problems. Life problems are just like that, right? They're no different. As soon as you piece them, you know, and you understand, okay, maybe I can chew this little piece today, and when I'm done, you know, I'll move on, right? And so that's really, you know, what that saying is going. Like any technique, right? Like you have to kind of develop one for yourself in the end. But, you know, when we're talking about program management, you're safe to start with a little bit of a vision, right? A little bit more of a strategy, and a lot of execution. Like just don't stay still. You cannot stay still. You know, like all plans are there to, you know, not be followed when you start to execute, because only when you get into it and you start doing it, you keep moving, things start to happen.
That's such good advice. And like you said, not just for data management and data intelligence, but in life.
Stop, you know, don't overthink it, you know, and break it down. Break it down because anything, and you know, like how to eat an elephant one bit at a time, right? Like that sounds, you know, simple, and it's simple, but it's not easy. So the not easy part, you have to deal, you know, through those techniques. And we've been learning these life skills since we were kids, right?
That's right.
So we just need to remember them.
Excellent. I think, Tanya, that's such good advice to start with. What is some other advice you would give to people who are starting out on their data intelligence journey, not necessarily just with Calibra, but in general?
Don't delay. I think that's the first, you know, thing I would say. Don't delay. Industry trends are changing rapidly. Start somewhere. Like, just jump in, right? Like jump in the middle and start.
That's more great advice. Thank you so much. I did want to ask also, I've heard you talk a lot about not reinventing the wheel and making sure that, you know, you're learning from other frameworks, other things out there, and taking a moment to even disrupt yourself. Could you tell us a little bit about what you mean by that?
Every job I ever been at in the past taught me something that never left my mind, right? And it's like every different position I was in added to that, right? So that's really where I learned not to reinvent. If I learned something from the previous experience, like that sticks with me, right? And I like to build on top of it. It's no different with the program, with the frameworks. There's so many great frameworks out there. Calibra has a couple that we used, and that was in our session yesterday, right? I was so excited to share with everyone that such a simple framework, like a long-term roadmap that we shared, that's Calibra's asset, right? Or adoption flow. Those are just like a couple of words in a flow, right, on a page. And they're there for you to really reuse, right? Like you have to find help in your past, in your past lives, in your experience as well with your partners. And I'm like, especially in my role, I'm very thankful for those early nudges that we got from Calibra with the simple frameworks as adoption framework, for example. I think I really squeezed every ounce out of that one in our case.
I love to hear that. I know you also have worked with our professional services team and premium support.
Yes.
Has that been helpful along the way too?
Amazing, actually. Like, we love the premium support. We don't know how we lived without you guys. And we discussed it with other customers as well, right? What we find very, very unique about the premium support is that maybe when you're starting, like, you know, your scope is smaller and, you know, you're managing your whatever you're doing, developing or adoption or whatever it is, right? But when you build, you know, capability after capability and you're pushing it to your internal customers, one thing you don't want to do is disrupt them. You don't actually want them to stop developing, right? And now all of a sudden they need to deal with this issue and this and that. So that's where, like, that's where we really saw the big, help from premium support, because that's the burden that then kind of goes off your chest. You know that you have that trusted partner and you're like, something's broken, right? And instead of having your DevOps, because DevOps, right, that's the trick, right? If they're not developing, they're operating. And if you have an issue, they're not developing, they're operating, right? And figuring challenges. That's where we go first and we say, something's not right. Can you investigate? Can you tell us what's going on, right?
So what's next for you in your data intelligence journey?
Did you ever watch the space shuttle takeoff?
Yes. Okay. Oh, I love it.
Okay, so do you know what happens? Like for the 90% of where the 90% of the energy goes when the space shuttle goes into space?
No,
fighting gravity.
Makes sense,
right? So that's how we felt, right? Like I think everyone starting such a big thing, right, feels like that. You at the beginning, you fighting that gravity, right? Like, and you cannot wait to be freed of that pull, right? That downward pull. On your, you know, your question was, you know, what's next? I cannot say what's that part of the story. What's next? If I don't say how intense is to start the program, right? And you're just being relieved, right, that oh my gosh, that gravity pull is getting less and less, like you're getting more and more metadata into your repository, like you're getting the critical mass of that metadata, so you can start to get the, you know, high value use cases faster, and you can start to deliver metadata and data products faster to your users. So in that story, right, like it's really my answer to your question, right? That's where we're going next. Like we really see a lot of value in building metadata products, right? And we're doing that with automation. My colleague Sierra Ness had another session today, a very good one, on automating with metadata. And that's that, you know, building metadata products and getting into building data products, which are really important.
Yes. We've talked about data products a little bit. I know for you, it's so important to be able to deliver. Like, you focus on execution.
Yes.
Explain a little bit about why it's not just about the vision, but why is execution just so important? It might seem obvious, but if you don't mind.
Put a lot of emphasis on, you know, having a vision and strategy and planning, right? But if you don't do anything with those plans, right, like, you have nothing to show for. And that's, you know, like, if you're lucky, you know, you'll have a year or so, maybe two, until your sponsor goes, and where's the business value?
That long.
Amazing. That's why I'm like, extremely lucky. You have to be extremely lucky. Like, I'm sure, like, we actually heard some you know, customers here, and they're like, less than 6 months into their journey, and like, oh my gosh, I'm pressured, you know, the value, this value, that. That's the reality, right?
Yeah.
So basically, that's really where you need to start thinking differently and start to getting that metadata out. You know, you will have only so much time and grace, right, to get that critical mass of metadata in, so you can start to take it out and build products with it, right? So that's really, it's very specific to different companies and, you know, what where you want to go with it. But it's, that window is not that, you know, big.
Yeah.
You need to get going with your business value and your stakeholders really advocating for you. And, and if you do it so well, you don't have to sell it.
they'll see it.
They will see it, right?
Yes.
Do it so well, they want to come back for more.
Aside from your data journey, I think one of my favorite things to ask people is, you know, where do you see data intelligence and the crazy data world we live in coming over the next 5 years?
That's a very good question, Karen. I think it's a question that provides a lot of fun for you, especially if you're asking a lot of people, right? One thing I would like to start with is that at this point in time where we're at with the advancements, 5 years is too long.
Yes. Yeah, that is definitely compressed, hasn't it, recently?
Yes. Let's just go with, you know, what's in the future. Short, and I think it's shorter than 5 years, right?
I think
so,
you're right.
You know, like everybody else is seeing the trend, right? Like, there's a trend of, you know, most talked about. We know it's Gen AI, natural language processing. You never heard of it, right?
Yeah, what is this AI thing?
Machine learning, right? Like, those are the things that will change the speed that we need to deliver, you know, on. Will change people, and maybe not in expected ways. I think what we already seeing, and AI, you know, like these talks and Gen AI, was the, you know, like, big news of 2023. However, and it's still, you know, we're still trying to figure out, you know, is it good? Is it bad? You know, is it governed? Is it not governed? Right? But what's already doing to us as people, right, is it's changing our expectations.
That's right.
We don't even have any assurance that there's value in this and that in it, right? Like, but we already changed our expectations. So now we turn around to, you know, every software, and we're like, oh, I want it to behave like ChatGPT. I want it just to ask a question, right? So that, I think that's really one of the most interesting things that's happening, and it will continue to happen in the next, you know, few years. You know, you will have your technical advancements, and they will influence people. And, you know, we have short attention spans anyway, right? But with promise, with such a great promises, I think that's the big one. We will expect more of everything out there.
And of ourselves, I think,
yes.
As well. Absolutely.
Yes. Yes.
All right. Well, Tanya, thank you so much for being with me today. It's always such a joy. And to be with you in person is just so life-fulfilling. That was a little dramatic, but I'm going to say it anyway. So I just want to say, finally, do you have any last words, anything else you want to wrap up with?
With this change, right? Like with this, five years in advance or something like that, and around, along those lines, I think what's really out there and we need to grasp it is that metadata products and data products are going to be the key for this industry, for insights and data management industry to go ahead. It'll be the key to start packaging data, insights, AI into products, right? And that's really what we where we also going with the metadata. We really going into that direction that metadata is a product, right? So to our internal users, who knows, maybe in the future to our external customers, but metadata and data are going to be production, you know, products, real products, and they will move us faster and faster. And, you know, like I only hope data science is going to benefit out of that. And sky's the limit, I guess.
Great ending. Thank you so much, Tanya. Thanks to everyone who is here listening with us today. And we hope you'll continue to listen to the Data Download.
How can you not listen to Karen Corley interview and just instantly get a smile on your face? So fun, so very insightful. Shout out to Tanya for sitting down with our crew in Orlando and telling the TELUS story. They're one of my favorite customer examples. Now, let's talk about the big three things that I learned in today's episode. First, data democratization, well, it's the impetus for change. The team at TELUS, they knew they had a ton of data, but didn't know how to use it. Such a common challenge, and Tanya gave a masterclass on the ins and the outs of making data access self-service. Second, data transformation isn't easy. It's all about change management. Tanya introduced the idea of a chief morale officer that I just loved. In this like period of transition that you're going through, right? This role really involves providing unwavering support and optimism to keep the team motivated and focused. Last, but certainly not least, the most important thing to remember is to start small. Tanya uses this metaphor of eating an elephant to illustrate the approach of tackling large, complex challenges by breaking them down into smaller, manageable tasks. Team, this was a fun one for me today. I got to learn from Karen and from Tanya, and I hope that you did the same. And for Calibra, this is Data Citizens Dialogues. And I'm Thomas Brentz. Thanks for listening. Want even more insight into managing your data? Visit calibra.com/podcast for additional resources on the topics covered in our show. Be sure to follow us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode. Enjoy what we have to share? How about a 5-star review? At Calibra, we absolutely appreciate your support. Data Citizens Dialogues is a production of Calibra in collaboration with Stories Bureau.